the Laps Factor Podcast.
What is up, Premier Lacrosse League fans? We had a bunch of PLL action this week that we're going to have to talk about. It did not disappoint, as three of the four games that we'll talk about today were all decided by a single goal. And what we'll do is I'm going to change the format up here a little bit, because I'm going to start with what I'm going to call the dope PLL storylines, and then we'll get into a little bit of talk with the game recaps and things of that sort. So I wanted to start this whole thing here talking about some of the best storylines of the weekend. The number one storyline of the weekend, by far, bar none, and if you don't agree, you are wrong. Cross Ferreira made Paul Carcaterra eat absolute shit in the game between the Whips and the Chrome. And how it goes down is in the closing seconds of the Whips and the Chrome game. Sam Handley, he misses a shot that goes out of bounds. I think it was a question mark. And then Cross Ferreira backs that up. There's about 10 seconds on the clock at this point. Ferreira has the ball as it's starting to be, as they're starting to do the restart. And as the whistle was being blown, Peacock said the quiet part out loud. He says, "You don't want Cross Ferreira with the ball in this situation." Some shit like that. But let me shut up. I actually want you to live the moment here real quick, because it was this special. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to roll the. If you're an audio listener, you're only going to hear the audio. If you're on Spotify, flip your shit sideways, because you get to see the highlight in all of its glory. But this is incredible. So just take a listen.
You don't want Cross Ferreira making this last play.
Looks like he's going to against Warner. Can he get free?
Shoots and scores! Maybe you do want Cross Ferreira to make the last play.
Eat your words, Cark.
The announcer jinx.
So you saw it. Ferreira proceeded to book to the cage. He gets a step on his way to the middle of the field, lets it rip on the run, totally put Peacock in a body bag. That was absolutely something to see. And in all fairness here, there are a lot of people who hate the announcers for some odd reason. Maybe it's because they're corny. I actually like that about them. Maybe they don't like some of the things they say. If you try talking into a mic, especially on the fly like these guys have to do in terms of the space they have to fill, you're going to say some dumb shit. I'm a big Peacock fan. I'm a fan of the entire broadcast team, for most of college lacrosse, for the big games and for the PLL. So when I say Paul Carcaterra ate absolute shit, I'm saying it in a way where he knows he did. He thought it was hilarious and great. I'm sure Cross Ferreira thought the same shit. So, good-natured ribbing of Peacock here. Let's move on, though. The next thing I want to talk about here is Ryder Garnsey. Ryder Garnsey had himself an absolute day. Came out hot, scored three consecutive goals in the first quarter for the Woods. He finished the game with six goals off nine shots and a GB. I mean, disappointed that Ryder only ends up with a GB. He's usually good for three, maybe four GBs in a game. Didn't need to pick GBs up, though. He scored six of the Redwoods' first nine goals of the game, and then was held scoreless after about like 8 minutes or so from the third on. There was a defensive change, matchup change. I'm not sure how much that played into the situation, because the goals that he scored, a couple of them, he had just dudes draped all over him, and he still managed to score. So what a weekend of playing lacrosse he had this weekend, and then the weekend before that, winning a national title as a volunteer assistant for Notre Dame. That was pretty dope. So Ryder Garnsey, congrats to him. He had himself a day. One thing also that I wanted to talk about that I was pleased with, Connor Fields. Connor Fields is playing attack now, once again, for the Archers. I originally, when I saw him trot out into the field, I was wondering, well, hey, is this just being done to pay lip service, you know, to pay service and homage to Albany, to the Albany fans, to Connor for playing in Albany here? He ends up scoring four goals in his return to Albany here. Looked really comfortable playing his natural position of attack as opposed to kind of coming in out of the box. And granted, still playing offense from that left wing that he likes, albeit as a midfielder. But, you know, you can't say enough about, as an attackman, how much of a rhythm you're able to get into being on the field all the time and getting to be in on every offensive shift. And I feel like that played well for the Archers, having him back down there on attack. Not to mention, I'll roll the highlights as I'm talking about it. He scored a disgusting one-handed between the legs goal from a bit of distance. I think was it Dane Smith that did that years prior? I think this might've even been from a little bit further out. Sick goal that he scored. So that was pretty dope as well. So credit to Connor Fields for having himself a day here on his return to Albany. Another thing that I want to talk about here, two more things, and these aren't offensive-related things, was the shot clock after the face-off rule. This new rule absolutely blows. The worst part of the entire weekend, and it's usually the worst part of a weekend of, you know, first week action in any pro sport, the game tends to be a little rough, especially in the first quarter. This happens in the NFL. This happens in the NBA. This happens anywhere where you play sports. You're playing your first game. That first quarter, maybe even the first half, is going to look a little bit rough. Where play stunk all day long in the first weekend of PLL action was after every face-off win. And it what the new rule is after a face-off win, you only get 32 seconds on the shot clock. So I believe part of the goal was you wanted to limit the effectiveness that face-off guys had. But this is a problem with not thinking something out fully. Because if you want to limit the effectiveness that the face-off has, that's one thing. But to limit it so much that now the first 32 seconds, you're handicapped if you win a faceoff. Winning a faceoff could actually be looked at as a bad thing because in your first possession, you A, have a shortened shot clock, B, you've got inferior talent on the field. Now, some people are going to be like, what the fuck are you saying, man? Inferior talent. And it's like, hear me out. Inferior talent. They call them FOGOs for a reason. And I understand FOGOs. Guys who face-off athletes hate that moniker, but it is the truth. If you are a face-off guy, there is not a single face-off guy in the Premier Lacrosse League that should be on the field during an offensive set. That's not to slam these guys in their offensive prowess. They can do some damage. It's just that the PLL is so loaded across all levels offensively. I mean, you've got the best offensive midfielders playing the game, period, and there's not a whole lot of them. And you've got a bunch of attackmen playing midfield, guys who played attack their whole lives playing midfield, and then you just got the filthiest attackman to ever play the game. I mean, these offensive rosters are loaded. So to take every team's first possession and reward a face-off win with a handicap possession where you're either rushing your face-off unit on the field and then getting everybody on the field for that first look, and you've only got maybe 20 seconds left, maybe 15 seconds left on the shot clock to rush that first look. That's your reward. Your reward for winning the face-off is let us completely shortchange you on the amount of time now that you have to score this, you know, get this first shot off. But on top of it, if you're forced to leave those guys on, which a lot of times the teams did, now you've got inferior talent on the field to start the first 32 seconds after every goal. Not a fan. I think I immediately heard when I first heard the rule, because I admittedly I didn't pay attention to the rules until the day of the game. And when I heard that that was the case, immediately I was like, well, this is going to suck. And did it result in TD Erlin scoring the first goal of the PLL season? Yes. Is TD Erlin known for scoring goals? Absolutely fucking not. You'd almost say of faceoff guys, TD Erlin is one of the more allergic face-off men in terms of scoring goals, because he just focuses on winning a face-off and getting the fuck off the field, you know, like a face-off guy ought to do in this league. If he doesn't get a look on the push and he's not running a fast break, win that shit, get off the field. And this was not what happened. I thought the sloppiest play of the whole weekend happened, and you know, pretty much after most of the face-offs. And I think that there's no reason to believe that's going to get better. I don't see how that's going, you know, it'll get better to a degree because strategies after those wins will form, but it's a totally watered down version of lacrosse after a goal is scored that you're going to get in the next 32 seconds. It's bullshit. I think it's a completely moronic rule and they need to do away with it. What sucks is they probably won't. What sucks is there's going to be more, you know, people that defend this when most lacrosse people would agree, It's a moronic rule. Totally stupid. I don't even want to use the moron word. There's other words I want to use to describe it that I will get canceled for, and I can't. It was just completely stupid here. Now, to be more positive, though, and this is, once again, not tying into the offensive side of things, defensive midfielders in this league play a much larger role than at any other level of lacrosse, hands down. And, duh, you're dealing with the pros and you're dealing with the best players at every position. But one thing I thought would happen in the PLL, and I think it kind of did happen in the first year or two of PLL play, was that offenses kind of ran roughshod to a degree when you when you're dealing with a scenario where you you have the best offensive players in the world playing against the best defensive players in the world, but then you say, hey, not only are these short stick midfielders, these defensive midfielders, handicapped because they've got to use the short stick, they're now also having to guard dudes who scored 150 points in college playing attack. And they have to guard these guys now, too. They're not just guarding the best midfielders in the world. They're guarding the best offensive guys in the world. And I wasn't sure how that would play out as the game developed. But one thing that we saw for sure this weekend, like the guys like Logan, Danny Logan, Harris, Tarasenko, Warner, they're all known quantities. But this weekend we saw even the young guns, the young guys, guys like Piper Bond, who really did play short stick D midfielder in college, came in, had a good weekend of defense. The one I was the most impressed with was Nekhai Montgomery. This dude was an offensive midfielder his entire career at Duke. He is a brilliant offensive player, high IQ, incredible athletic abilities. The dude has a cannon of a shot, but he developed into a very good feeder over his last, especially his last season at Duke. He's brought that into the PLL, but this year, at least in this first game, he was playing, I believe he played even on the wings on the faceoffs a little bit. He played defense, got a ton of defensive shifts, and they're using him as a defensive midfielder, it would seem. But then he ends up staying on the field, and when we'll look at the stats here, but I believe he had three assists in the game. There was always a big deal made of how the PLL was going to kind of bring back the two-way midfielder, and that hasn't necessarily happened. We've seen a even deeper development of the specialty guys, the defensive specialists and things like that, and we see them shine offensively at times. But I mean, if we could see guys like Montgomery, if we end up seeing more guys like this, and we're going to see this now too, because we're going to see how guys like Jakubowicz, I think, got drafted, and who's the other dude from Tevlin, guys like that, and what's his nuts from Maryland, Bubba Fairman, as we see guys like that continue to transition from offensive midfielder to defensive midfielder at the college level, and then come to the PLL. One thing I you'll say is attackmen that are forced to play defense sometimes impress you. It's because these dudes are athletic as shit. They're quick as shit. So sometimes you'll see an attackman get stuck on defense, or you'll see a defense or an offensive midfielder get stuck on defense, and they will impress you with how well they play defense. The more we see this kind of thing where you see guys who got a ton of offensive time in college coming in and doing a good job, because Montgomery didn't just play defensive midfield. He had to guard Romar Harris a bunch of the time and held his own. Romar Dennis, and did a good job. So I'm rambling at this point, but defensive midfielders are playing a huge role in the league. They're doing much better than I thought they would, to the point that they are greatly limiting some of the best offensive players in the world, and they're doing it with their feet and just a 40. I think if you play with a 40-inch stick as a defensive midfielder, you're probably doing something wrong. I'm sure they're hanging out with 42-inchers or something to that effect. But anyway, they've impressed me a great deal, and I thought that was worth mentioning here. So now let's kind of dive into what happened over the weekend here. We'll talk a little bit about the Redwoods and the Atlas game first. And this is a game from a betting perspective. I took the Atlas. I even took the Atlas by the spread. Did not pan out for me, and I lost this bet. As we said, Ryder Garnsey played a huge role here. This is a new thing that the PLL is doing that I dig, is you can now hover over these goals, and it shows you the game flow from up here. So as we see, Ryder Garnsey, he didn't score the first goal. That was TD Erlin, as I said. But you see Garnsey scores here. Garnsey scores there. After a Atlas goal, Garnsey scores again. Charlie Bertrand, he got one. I believe that was his behind-the-back that he scored from Rob Pennell. But then Garnsey again. And then, hey, the Atlas come back again, get back in it. And then Garnsey, Westberg got one from Montgomery. Garnsey. So like Garnsey had himself a game, as we saw. This one came right down to the end here. Garnsey scored to tie things up. And then Xander Dixon had the disgusting goal that he scored on an assist from Jeff T. You know, I think, I don't know, it was like 47 seconds left in the game or something to that effect, where Garnsey feeds Dixon on the crease. Dixon's getting pushed. He's falling down. His back is to the cage, and he just kind of whips it over his shoulder as he's almost on the ground, catches the keeper, napping a little bit, scores that goal, wins that game. So great job there. As we kind of look through the statistics here, Garnsey, 6 goals. Westberg had an excellent game here as well. He had 4 points, 3 goals, and an assist. Nekhai Montgomery confirmed he had 3 assists on the day. Didn't take a shot or anything like that. But like I said, that he played a complete two-way midfield role in this game, and it was absolutely incredible to see. Atlas, Jeff Teat had a goal and 4 assists. Eric Law, very good at playing the position of attack, off ball, 4 goals and an assist. Does not need the ball in his stick almost at all to do damage, similar to Xander Dixon here. Costabile, they all got it done. It was a good game overall, and it was the Redwoods who made me a big time loser, and the Redwoods pull it out by a goal over the Atlas. The next game I wanted to talk about here was the Archers and the Cannons. This was the only not one goal game, and Archers end up winning 16-13. The first quarter was an absolute snooze fest as Ryan Drenner scored a goal fed by Asher Nolting, and then that was the only goal of the entire first quarter. And everything was looking very dismal in terms of people who picked the over, which I did pick. This was like, I think the only bet of the weekend that I won was, I think, the over hit in this one. And then, the rest of it was kind of crazy here. Third quarter, fourth quarter, we saw a metric shit ton of goals here overall. In the end, it was the Archers that won by that 3. Connor Fields, as I'd already talked about, he had 4 goals on the day, 2 ground balls, just a single turnover. Tom Schreiber looked excellent distributing the ball. He ends up with a goal and 3 assists. Now, I forgot one of the points I wanted to talk about here. Was Mac O'Keefe. Mac O'Keefe has one of the funkiest releases in all of lacrosse. It was great to see Schreiber run a little bit of picks, not even pick slip action. It was actually Schreiber ran off a pick, and O'Keefe just kind of faded off of his man and got a quick shot off. Well, like I said, O'Keefe is one of the best off-ball players to ever play the sport, and a lot of off-ball guys do a lot of mixing it up on the crease area. O'Keefe is one of the best off-ball players to ever kind of run around the fringes of a defense. He's not a dude like Dixon who's going to cut down the middle of the field and score goals. He's going to look for seams on the outside. He's going to curl off picks and get shots off. The dude is an outside off-ball threat. There's other guys like that, Brown, but I still think in terms of his movement off-ball, I think there's nobody like O'Keefe. He's got an absolutely weird release by design. Like the way he releases the ball by design is to fool goalies, and it works incredibly. And he just had a hell of a game here for the Archers as well with his 3 goals. And that's all I'm going to say about that one. Like I said, I'm going to try to focus more on actual storylines. The PLL, everyone's already watched the highlights. Everybody knows what happened with these games. You guys don't need a blow by blow from me here. So I'll get better at talking about the games as time goes on, mostly as I get used to looking at the stats here, because you can see things are still a little funky on the screen overall. But, and then another thing to point out here in this game was Sisselberger. Mike Sisselberger, rookie faceoff guy, he wins 24 of 30. And as I said, on a day where winning the faceoffs didn't necessarily mean you won the game, that was the case here. Sisselberger just absolutely ripped Kelly up. He wins 24 of 30 with 14 ground balls, ends up with 2 points on the day. What were his points here? Sisselberger ended up with a goal and an assist on the day. And if you followed Sisselberger in college, not a dude that put up a lot of points. So that part of it will be interesting, forcing faceoff guys and rewarding faceoff guys on those first possessions where some of them are going to push it and put some points up. But it's still, you're putting an inferior offensive talent on the field, at an important time. But Sisselberger, man, absolutely fucked Kelly up, and that was interesting to see. And actually, I wanted to talk about it in the previous game because I think in the Woods game, we saw Trevor Baptiste do this. He wins 19 of 28 faceoffs for the Atlas, but they did not win the game, and they still lost the game because, like I said, offensively, it looked like they struggled a little bit more. So I think one thing, maybe personnel will play into it. If your team is built to be able to handle those situations more effectively, maybe you'll do better. So it's something I'm going to watch very closely over the next couple of weekends of lacrosse PLL action, is what happens when you win the faceoffs? How are teams going to change their strategy? How will it play into who you end up putting on the wing, maybe, because as I said here, I don't know. I'm rambling about that one too here. So I'm going to shut up about that game. We're going to hit the next game here, Water Dogs and the Chaos. This one actually went into overtime by the end of it here. It was Zach Currier who scored the game tying goal. No, that's not right. No, I'm sorry. It was Brian Minikis, the rookie out of Georgetown. Brian Minikis, Colgate transfer, went to Georgetown, had a good season here with them this year. He scored the game tying goal for the Chaos to force overtime, and then it was Connor Kelly who ended up winning the game in overtime. Got down, dodged on the left side, fell down at about goal line extended, but when he got up, he kind of got the step on his defender there underneath, and he ends up putting one past Blaze. It looked like Reardon actually got a piece of even that one. Key in this game here was Blaze Reardon had a hell of a game here. Reardon, both goalies played well. DeLuca, 11 saves. He was 61% between the pipes. But Reardon just impresses me because there's a lot of movement out of them. Reardon has no wasted movements in his game at all. If he's guessing, he guesses right and he does it calmly. But a lot of it, I think, is just instincts and being in the right place at the right time. 18 saves, 72% in this game. They still lose it, but you know, without him, they get beat by 3, 4, 5 goals. They're playing shorthanded. This happens to the Chaos every year. Box heavy team. A couple other players play for the Bandits, and they need them badly. So they're playing shorthanded at this stage, but Reardon is able to keep them in it. This is another scenario where faceoff dot rookie Nick Rowlett out of Michigan, he ends up roaching the dot here, 13 of 18. They still lose the game, so something to watch as we move forward as well. If we dive a little bit into what happened, Kyle Jackson for the Chaos, he goes for a goal and a helper. Nothing here. Smith from Robert Morris, he goes 1-1. Like I said, they're playing without their stars, their big stars at this point. And for the Water Dogs, Kelly scores the game winner. He's got a goal and a two-point goal, so he ends up with 3 points. He scored a two-point goal this weekend. Kieran McArdle, 3 assists on the day. Sowers had just that single point, and he got lit up on that goal that he scored. That's it. Decent PLL action this weekend. I will come up with more of a format. I've had a busy week here, so I kind of rushed through this. But like I said, the front of the show is going to be mostly devoted to highlights, storylines, specific plot points and things like that, as I think the PLL lends itself better to that format. I think the PLL fans will take a little bit more interest. So I'll play around with the format over the next couple of weeks. Chirp me in the comments and let me know what you'd want me to talk about and all that stuff. And that's it. I will be back next Wednesday. It's just going to be a Wednesday thing. Maybe there's days where I bump it to Thursday due to work, but I'm going to try to put out a midweek show every week where we go through the games. I'm not going to do big previews here for this weekend, even though you might like me to, but we will at least rip through the schedule here. Friday, and I believe this might, 6 p.m., so we do have night lacrosse. I'm actually going to try to set my projector up this weekend and maybe watch a little bit of night lacrosse in the backyard this weekend. But we have the Chrome and the Archers. They're both 1-0. They'll be facing off against each other here. And then we have the Water Dogs and the Redwoods at 8:30 p.m., the nightcap on Friday night. They're both 1-0 as well. So the teams that are 1-0, they're all playing each other here on Friday night, and then the teams that are all winless and sitting at 0-1 are all playing on Saturday. We got the Whipsnakes and the Atlas, and then we've got the Cannons and the Chaos. So those will be the games this weekend. Like I said, next week I'll probably start doing my previews and everything. After there's 2 weeks of lacrosse under the belts, I can examine the statistics and everything. But because I was, you know, right up against it with the college game here, haven't had too much time to prepare. So that's it. I'm going to shut the hell up and get out of here. Come back next week, Wednesday morning, for next week's show. That next week we will do a bigger recaps and we'll do a little bit more in terms of previews. But that's it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And Hoost is out.
The Lax Factor Podcast.